Welcome to Conversations with Creative Waco, the show that brings you the stories and voices shaping Central Texas's creative landscape. I'm your host, Fiona Bond. This month, we're exploring a powerful idea, how creativity moves through generations. From the stage to the studio, from mentor to student, from one artist's vision into the hands of the next, creativity is not static, it's passed on, reshaped and reimagined. In our first half, we'll step into the world of performance with a classical twist, with Joe Taylor, who teaches theatre, movement and dance at McLennan Community College and is helping bring an exciting new theatrical work to life. And in our second half, we'll explore artistic legacy in visual art with artists Cade Kegaris and Vincent Thomas, whose work is featured alongside that of their mentor, internationally renowned artist Kermit Oliver, in a new exhibit at the Waco Welcome Center. Let's begin on stage. My first guest has spent his career bringing movement to story. Joseph Taylor is Associate Professor of Theatre, Movement and Dance at McLennan Community College. With a BFA and MFA in dance from Florida State University, Joe has worked internationally as a choreographer, performed at Walt Disney World, toured professionally, and created more than 50 original works. Here in Waco, he has become an integral part of our theatre community, collaborating across organizations and helping shape productions both on stage and behind the scenes. He is also a board member for Creative Waco. Right now, he is part of the creative team at MCC, bringing to life the world premiere of Song of Iphigenia, a new play based on Aeschylus' Oresteia trilogy by fellow MCC professor Nick Webb. Joe, welcome to Conversations with Creative Waco.
Well, thank you, Fiona. Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about how you got started in movement and dance. What's your origin story as a creative?
How I got started. So I always knew from a small child that performance was what I was going to be doing. I grew up singing with my family, and as I got into school and got into choir and doing all of that, and then theater started entering my life. So by the time I was, you know, finishing high school, I had already done like three or four musical productions and had decided that musical theater was what I wanted to do with my life. So I went to college and I started at community college, very much like MCC, at a place in Florida where my home is from. And I started singing. I got a vocal scholarship to the college and was working with their choirs. And the choreographer for the show choir for that college was like, if you would just take a dance class and let me put a little bit of technique under you, you have such a lot of natural ability. And so I started taking ballet and jazz and modern, and then I kind of got bit by the dance bug. And then when I was not accepted as a musical theater major when I was auditioning for four-year universities, then, you know, she was also like, well, let me take you to my alma mater and I know that they'll take you. And so I started, and that's how I ended up in the dance program at FSU. And so then even though throughout my college years, I was just dancing, but then I got into, got back into theater. And then my entire professional career is built on musical theater and, you know, going from dinner theaters to working at Disney and then doing cruise ship work. And then I started teaching academically almost, dare I say, 20 years ago. And so I I've been teaching and I've been at McLennan for the last 7 years. So it's, you know, it's been a big, long story, but it's been a fun life. I've been afforded a lot of opportunities and I'm so grateful for all of that. And, you know, so that's kind of how I ended up here. And, you know, why I do the things that I do is because I had people generationally saying, this is what you're supposed to do here. Let me help you get to where you want to go.
I love that you're now serving the role that, you know, people did for you all the way along and back in a community college, which is very much the setting that got you started on that path.
Absolutely. And that's one of the most rewarding things about being a professor of the arts, or I think being a teacher, period. Anyone who teaches, no matter what the subject be, I think that's the most rewarding thing, is to, like, you're working to prepare your students for their next step of their life. And you know, and you get to celebrate the joys, and you get to, you know, like, you get to comfort the tragedies, and you get to do all of those things. And then you get to see, I'm still in contact with students that I had 20 years ago, and they are now doing all of these wonderful things and living parts of the lives, and most of them living greater lives than I ever did. So,
well, I also had no idea that you had not started dancing, like, formally. Until you were already post high school.
I was 18 years old when I took my first ballet class. And so it was a lot of work. It was a lot of dedication, and, you know, and knowing that there was a lot of time to make up. So it was just a matter of just really trying to focus the energy and, you know, to propel myself into the area where I knew I wanted to go.
Well, and I love that as you pour yourself into teaching, you have also poured yourself into our community and theater throughout the community. I think every single theater group in Waco has benefited from your expertise. And we're very grateful for that.
Well, I appreciate that. Like, I just love doing what I do. And I love collaborating with other people. And when you've got creative people all over the city, like we do here in Waco, it makes it easy. And it was really great because I moved here 6 months before the pandemic happened. And so I've literally had to, like, build, you know, and plus I was the new guy. No one knew, you know, no one knew who I was. When I came back and started teaching in Florida, I was coming back to legacy. I was coming back to, like, people who already knew who I was and what I was capable. And so here, like, you know, it took, you know, a couple of years to really solidify where everybody was like, you know, wow, he does a pretty good job, you know, so, like, let's have him back. And so it's been great to work with all of the different theater companies here in Waco.
Hard to get to know people in theater when there's a pandemic.
Well, absolutely. Right.
Well, let's talk about Song of Iphigenia, or Iphigenia, I should say. This play reimagines the ancient Greek story of the House of Atreus for modern audiences. And playwright Nick Webb says in his notes that he felt compelled to make modern audiences more familiar with this story. Why is this a story worth telling in modern times? It's lesser known, right?
It is a lesser known story, but I think it's lesser known just because it is such an old story. It is a, you know, it's something that you really only study if this is what you're doing. You know, like, I mean, this is, like, you know, Greek theater history. And I was not as, because my training and my education is in dance, you know, there was a lot about this story that I had to learn. And, you know,
the movement is very specific.
It is, you know, and then just kind of, but just understanding the story and how it all comes together. And it's the same, like, I mean, if anyone is familiar with the story of the Oresteia, and so we're talking about the family of Agamemnon and Clytemnestra and Orestes and Electra, and all of these, all of those characters end up having their own storyline that goes somewhere. And everyone forgets about the firstborn of Clytemnestra and Agamemnon, which is Iphigenia. And she was the one that was sacrificed so that the winds of war would blow so that Agamemnon could defeat the Trojan army. And so, you know, when you take that story, and, you know, and so you got years of, you know, they were at war for 10 years. So you have 10 years of Clytemnestra, like, grieving, but nowhere for that grief to go, nowhere for that anger to go. And so, like, then he comes home from war, and then she's like, yes, okay, well, I can't take it anymore. So I'm going to have to, like, end your life, you know. And it's a deep, dark, old tale, and it's an old song, and sometimes we need to go back and remember the old so that we don't make the same mistakes.
Which are, I mean, here, this is the unintended and intended consequences of war.
Absolutely.
And the ripple effect that violence, especially violence that ends up being meted out where we least expected.
And it's this story that, you know, like this you hear this phrase over and over in the show about blood spilling blood and about family killing and hurting family. And these, you know, like in these ancient plays, these families are all from gods. You know, they all come from gods. And then as they come, as that works through, so this is where the Furies come from. And they are all born from this family killing family, and they're there for retribution. They're there to bring justice.
It's like the forces unleashed.
Correct.
From the decisions that are made.
Exactly.
Which, I mean, that is metaphorical for so much that we see in the world. As a choreographer and movement specialist, when you approached this piece, where did you begin? Because it's very much a, it's a stylized, very different kind of movement
so
to what you're used to.
So I worked very closely with the cast, and there is a form of dance that is really used a lot in the theatrical world, and it's from Rudolf Laban. And so Laban has a series of what are called the eight efforts. And it is the eight movements that our bodies do naturally, like pressing, pulling, gripping, grasping, wringing, dabbing, flicking. And so taking all of those ideas and...
I wish our listeners could see how you're moving your body as you say each of those words.
It's... And then, because one of the things that I teach my students is that it's not just a physical language, but it's also, it's something that can be done with the voice. Like you can really press someone so that you really understand, you know, like when you're trying to get your point across. So it actually allows you to, using those efforts allows you to be a more expressive performer. And so taking those ideas, because we didn't want it to be dance. We wanted it to be, have more of a feel of what it would have been like for a Greek chorus in, you know, in 6 BCE. And so then when you're taking all of that and working with the students and taking their ideas and going like, well, what does that make you feel? How does, you know, like when we say this line, what like movement comes to your head? And, you know, and so then we worked together in my stage movement class and to develop this material. So all of my students in that class have had a part in helping to develop what this movement looks like. And then also I have one of our other directors, Corey Burkett, who is our adjunct theater professor. And she has been working right now. She comes from the, you know, from the Stella Adler School in New York. And so she's very movement based as well. And so she and I like then take all of this movement that the students are coming up with and then craft it into the choreography that it became. And so it's been a very fun process. And the kids, the students, I'm sorry, y'all, like they're my babies. And so, but the students are taking a lot more ownership because they have helped. It's not just me walking into a room and being 5, 6, 7, 8 and everybody do exactly what I said and then me yelling and screaming at them because they didn't do it. And so
it's
then
kind of an evolution of movement.
Right. And so and then taking that idea and allowing it to grow and birth something that is even greater than I could have come up with on my own.
That sounds absolutely amazing. I cannot wait to see the production. And I know it's going to be very special, especially, you know, I know Nick was wanting to join us this morning. He has just started cancer treatment, so I want to give a shout out to him. What an amazing production that he's put together.
The story that he has told is beautiful. And we went through a whole process. Like, I mean, it's been a whole process. This putting this show together has been about a year and a half.
Wow.
Of us planning and sitting through read-throughs and, You know, and this whole segment, like us putting this show together, has really been more like a workshop where we've been like, okay, we, you know, we can get rid of this, we need more of this, and like let's build this together so that it becomes the dramatic piece that you really want it to be. And so he has been to almost every rehearsal and has approved every, you know, like everything that we've done. So we're truly grateful to have been given this opportunity and, you know, to work alongside a colleague whom we work with a lot anyway, but to a deeper level and even into his creative genius. And so it's been an absolute joy to work on this piece.
What a special production. Well, Joe, thank you so much.
It has been an absolute pleasure. Fiona, thank you so much for having me.
And thanks for bringing this story to life and for reminding us that movement can carry meaning just as powerfully as words. Song of Iphigenia runs April 23rd to 25th at 7:30 p.m. and April 26th at 2 p.m. at the McLennan Community College Music and Theatre Arts Building. If you are just joining us, you are listening to Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU, Waco's NPR station. I'm your host, Fiona Bond. From ancient stories reimagined on stage, we turn now to artistic legacy expressed across generations of painters and the quiet but profound influence one artist can have on those who follow. The exhibition From Hermes to Home brings together the work of Kermit Oliver, the only American artist to design for the Paris fashion house Hermes, alongside two artists he mentored at a pivotal moment in their lives, Cade Kegaris and Vincent Thomas. Welcome, Cade and Vincent.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
They are both now shaping Waco's visual landscape in powerful and highly visible ways. Cade is a Baylor-trained artist and muralist whose vibrant, large-scale works have become part of Waco's visual identity. Through his mural practice, Devolved, he has created work for iconic local institutions like George's Dr. Pepper Museum, Texas Sports Hall of Fame, as well as projects across Texas and beyond. Cade was part of Creative Waco's very first art apprenticeship cohort as a junior mentor and has returned multiple times as a full mentor to guide the next generation of young artists, including co-designing the Tree of Life mural with Vincent Thomas in 2020. Vincent is an artist and designer from East Waco whose work centers on representation, memory, and presence, particularly honoring Black and Brown communities through portraiture and public art. His work often places figures in symbolic environments like classrooms, gardens, and civic spaces, grounding personal identity in shared experience. Vincent is the founder of A Beautiful Message, a community-based public art and mentorship initiative, and his work can be seen throughout the interior of the new Bledsoe Miller Steam Center. He has also served multiple times as a mentor for Creative Waco's art apprenticeship program. Together, these are artists whose work is not only aesthetically powerful, but deeply rooted in place, purpose, and community. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Fiona.
This exhibition is about mentorship and legacy. Can you take us back to how you met Kermit Oliver? How did that come about?
Okay, I'll go first. I'm Vincent, and the first time I came across Kermit Oliver and his work was actually meeting him with you, Cade, at his house. We were being guided by Mary, and she set up a meeting with Kermit to pretty much introduce us as young artists and showcase him and his work. And yeah, he was going to be our mentor for that year. I think that was 2014.
Yeah, a while ago. And I guess similar experience around the same time. Mary Wentworth and Carol Crosswaite somehow organized a meeting at Barnes & Noble with
wow.
Kermit, and I think he expected to have a conversation, maybe never see me again, and we just hit it off and ended up getting his address because, as many know, he doesn't have a phone, doesn't do the internet, and corresponded through writing for a bit and then ended up starting to go to his house and developing that relationship with Vincent as well and just diving into his world.
That is remarkable. And you guys were high schoolers at this point, right? Or
shortly after high school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you were teenagers, and he was pouring himself and his artistic legacy into you guys. I don't know anyone else who's had that experience.
I think at the time for us, we didn't realize how huge that was. And even now, it's such a blessing that we've even had the opportunity to meet him, let mm-hmm. alone, you know, be welcomed into his home and his life.
Yeah, it was the first time that I was able to see so many paintings in someone's home, and it just feels so personal but also creatively majestic, and that really opened my eyes as an artist to say, wow, there's somebody locally that's doing this full time. Possibly I can do it too. So
Wow. What do you feel that you learned from Kermit Oliver during that period when you were mentored by him?
Really, just the depth of conversation would hit so many just elements of life and living as an artist and thinking like an artist, and more philosophically than anything. We never talked about color mixing or anything art related almost, but we dabbled on everything else that I guess art was still the center of.
That is so interesting.
Yeah, that's exactly what Kay said. It was a lot of life experiences and tying that to your art and being able to reference art. Kermit has so many books that he pulls from. And I think that is one of the most interesting thing about his art is that he's really an archival type of guy. He's very historian when he goes into these books that he's pulling, like, you know, animals from or even referencing people from, but it's never forced. I think that was the biggest thing that I've learned from Kermit is that a lot of his approaches are organic and really natural to the experience that he wants to live versus like pleasing, you know, a certain type of place or person or thing. It really is very personable to him.
Well, I think when people see this exhibit at the Welcome Center, they will see that that is very much a thread in both your work as well. And you can see that in the work that you've both done in public art, the breadth of you guys' education that I think permeates those artworks. You see things popping up as well as technique. I actually thought you were going to describe, oh, he taught us how to mix, you know, this specific color, you know, type of red, or you know, he taught us brushwork techniques. That is so interesting because I think there is also a technique strand that I see kind of flowing from him to you guys too.
And it may be through osmosis or something because it is kind of crazy that we have never done anything physical with him.
Yeah.
It's always been just conversation, but still being able to gain so much from that.
And he's very much a painter's painter. Now that you've had time to develop your own artistic styles and artistic practices, looking back, where do you see his influence most strongly in your work now?
Echoing what Vincent said, his main purpose of creation is to be true to whatever that feeling is or whatever he's trying to get out of this piece. I think that's what I've taken away the most of being intentional and having a bigger purpose rather than creating something that's pretty. So I don't know stylistically or technically what I've gained, but it may be everything.
Yeah, I would say for me, I really adored Kermit's portrait work and how he centered, you know, the environment around the portraits and the people that are being the main subject or the center of the story. And I really loved how he utilized colors and animals and insects and just different kind of mystical things that feel mystical, but they're real, and made them a bit larger in life. And also like these Easter eggs moments that you can spot out in his paintings. I really loved that about Kermit's work and that he wasn't shy to maximize the canvas or the scarf. Like you see a lot of patterns or just techniques that are very flamboyant and bright and vibrant. So I really think that seeing that in art is special, especially as a Black artist. A lot of our art style is considered stereotypically urban, but for Kermit, it felt very high end, and I can see why the fashion design house shows him
as. Yeah, White and Hermes was, recruiting him, and I think he remains the only U.S. artist to have done scarves for Hermes, which is remarkable. You have both now yourselves become mentors to the next generation of artists, and you're very much at the forefront of this new wave of public art for Waco. How do you approach your own role as mentors, and what do you think this means for Waco?
It's been crazy to see the last decade. That's for sure. So much growth, so much new opportunities, so many new up-and-coming artists. And really, I think our goal as people and as artists is to encourage and to spread the love of creating. And if we can play any part of that, I'm happy.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, artists are getting paid to do art. I think that's... is astounding here in Waco.
Huge, yeah.
It's a huge blessing, especially for the youngsters who are learning what art is to them, but also trying to figure out their lives financially and, you know, probably just pay for different things like prom, or they just want an extra snack in class. They get to use their art to pay for those things, and I think that's really cool. And as a mentor, just being able to showcase the work that we're putting into, like, a lot of people see the glitz and the glam, which is the final piece, but they don't see how many hours you're staying up and how many days you're either frustrated that a piece isn't going the way that you wanted it to go and you have to tear it up and start over again. We get to share that experience with the youngsters, so we are able to, you know, guide them and lead them and say, hey, keep going, because practice is what gets you to that end results. And then I would say lastly, being able to showcase community with, like, other artists, professional artists here. Me and Kate have had a great relationship throughout the years, and I think the youngsters being able to see professional artists support each other like that, it really just showcased a larger goal.
That is huge. And I've personally seen both of you dedicate yourselves to a really high standard in everything that you do and just work so hard to, like, bring excellence. And I think, like, what I see the next generation learning from you guys is going the extra mile, like trying again and again to get something amazing, which I'm so grateful for. And I think you guys have really transformed the, like, the visual character of Waco. Thank you so much for being here, and thank you so much for all that you do to bring that incredible visual personality to our city.
Thank you for having us, and thank you for being a part of so many of these opportunities that, you know, have really shaped us and Waco.
Thank you, guys. From Hermes to Home, Kermit Oliver and his influence on Cade Kegaris and Vincent Thomas is on view at the Waco Welcome Center from now through the summer, presented by Art Center Waco in partnership with Creative Waco and Destination Waco. It's a beautiful reminder that artistic legacy is not just something we inherit, it's something we carry forward and pass on. April and May are packed with an amazing array of events, concerts, exhibits, and performances. If music is your thing, there's free family-friendly programming such as the Levitt Amp Concerts on Bridge Street and Brazos Nights at Indian Spring Park. You can also enjoy Lucas Nelson at the Hippodrome and his dad, Willie Nelson, at Baylor Ballpark. And of course, Post Malone and Jelly Roll at McLean Stadium. There's something for everyone. The much-awaited Cultural Crossroads exhibit opens at the Mayborn Museum at the end of April, including a newly constructed Wichita Grass House. Festival on the Brazos offers an opportunity to experience highlights from Waco history and check out Performing Arts Community Center, Waco Civic Theater, and Silent House Theater, all of whom have upcoming productions. You can find more events at Waco Buzz, Waco Insider, and the new Culturalist platform. That's all for this episode. This has been Conversations with Creative Waco, and I'm your host, Fiona Bond, signing off so you can head out to enjoy all that Waco in springtime has to offer.
Conversations with Creative Waco is a production of KWBU. You can find this program and other local productions under the Programs tab at kwbu.org.